Greetings, friends. This is Dale Stewart, and this is Nature's Edge. Many of you that know me know that I'm a big fan of the world's great explorers, going back early on to Shackleton and Scott and Edmondson, Stanley and Livingston. But there's one more gentleman who has had a great influence on me, particularly in my outdoor world and in my world as an explorer. And we're going to talk about that gentleman today, and I'm going to introduce those of you who may not know Mr. Horace Gephardt. Horace, he's an American writer. He's a librarian. He's best known as the author of Our Southern Highlands, about his life in the Great Smoky Mountains of Western North Carolina, and the classic outdoor guide, Camping and Woodcraft. He originally was from up north. I think he was born in Pennsylvania and moved up into Ithaca, New York, upstate, and then at a later date made his way down here. My guest today is going to discuss her great-grandfather with us, and it's an honor and a pleasure to have this lady with us and my friend, Miss Libby Gephardt Hargrave. Libby, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing really well, Dale. Thank you so much for asking me to be with you today. Appreciate it greatly.
It is a pleasure to have you here. And I met Libby a number of years ago and was privileged and honored to be part of a documentary that she did about her great-grandfather. And Libby, again, thank you for that. But let's start out, just give us a little brief bio and background of Horace Gephardt.
I guess that's the challenge right off the bat, is a brief background, but I'll do my best. He was born in East Salem, Pennsylvania in 1862. Later they moved to, he and the family moved to Jefferson, Iowa, where he spent most of his time in the great outdoors. When he was about 7 years old, his mother gave him a copy of his most favorite book that remained his most favorite of all time, which was Robinson Crusoe. And that kind of sets the tone, Dale, for a life that he would lead. The outdoors, writing, great authors, just fascination with so many different, and had so many interests in life. And that is due a lot to the upbringing that he had.
Yeah, I think he was always an outdoorsman, and I obviously think he was an explorer simply because at a certain point in his life, he got a big map out and started looking for that wildest place and area he could find, and that's kind of what brought him to the Southern Appalachian Mountains of Western North Carolina, correct?
That's correct. Following a very well-respected and successful career as one of our nation's greatest librarians, in 1903, he suffered a nervous breakdown, which caused his wife and the six children, to move back to Ithaca, New York, so that she could be with her family. And he stayed in St. Louis. And from there, he went back to his parents' house. He got healthy, and he started his journey down to the Smokies, to his back of beyond.
Yes, yeah, the back of the beyond. That's I use that a lot in talks that I give and explain people what that is. But Libby, he was librarian at the Mercantile. Where was he the librarian?
He started off at Yale University as an assistant librarian. From there, he went to Cornell, and from there he went to the Mercantile Library in St. Louis. And at that point in time, it was one of the nation's largest libraries. And they had about 75,000 books at the time that he went there. And within the 10-year time that he was the head librarian, he doubled that amount of books. That's an amazing feat. So after that, after St. Louis and his nervous breakdown, he went to the Smokies, as we discussed. And he continued that librarianship frame of mind. You look how he documented everything, and you've seen at Western Carolina his journals and how he was so precise in everything that he did.
Oh, absolutely. And for those listeners, most of his work, or a lot of his work, is archived at the Western Carolina University in Cullowhee.
That's correct.
Yeah, and how can people go there? Can they? I know they've had exhibits on Horace, but can they just go there and dig into his journals and so forth, Libby?
Everything is available online through the special collections at the Hunter Library. So people, and I don't have the address at hand, but they can go to Western Carolina University website and link on to the Hunter Library and then special collections. And they finally have all of his journals online, which is really exciting. So as you know, Dale, the more we handle historic documents, the more damage. So right now the journals are not being handled by people. They can go online and get all the information they need to about him, which makes it very accessible for the first time that we've had this, all his journals.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. Yeah, I am so fortunate that I got to sit down with you at the library and with my white gloves on actually handle and read his journals. And there was no doubt that he was a librarian.
Correct.
And writer.
And just a magnificent writer. I think you mentioned two of his most famous books, which is Our Southern Highlanders and Camping and Woodcraft. And I think one of the magical things about Camping and Woodcraft, he so beautifully weaves into his stories of how to hike, how to camp, how do we cook, that he gives some of the greatest life lessons if we look for them in his writing. Of how do we live back of beyond, but how do we live back of beyond in our own daily lives? And I think he's one of the greatest teachers on that.
Oh, I agree. I mean, so many people, know who John Muir is and quote him quite a bit. But I think if they get introduced to Horace Gephardt and read some of his writings, they will find that they're kindred spirit there.
Oh, I think so, too. I want to go back to his nervous breakdown, if that's okay.
Please do.
I wrote in a program years ago that I gave about Horace Gephardt. I say that in 1903 it happened. Horace hit his tipping point. For years, the world had been spinning around him. Noises of an ever-changing city, the stress of work, six children, social responsibilities, the 1896 tornado that devastated St. Louis, the death of his sister, all spinning in a circle around him that had no end. And the spinning stopped and his circle imploded. And that can happen to any of us. We all have a tipping point, and we don't know what that is. The tornado that went through St. Louis in 1896, he got caught in it. And imagine this, Dale. You're trying to get home to your family. You're walking through this horrible tornado, and you see a little boy holding onto a lamppost, and Gephardt held onto that lamppost with the boy, holding his hand, and the tornado just ripped the boy from his hand. That's difficult.
Yes.
Just the visualization of that, I think, is so, so hard. So it was difficult for Horace when he had the breakdown. It was also very difficult on his wife, Laura, who I think is one of the true heroes of the Horace Gephardt's life, and Horace Gephardt's father, Isaiah. They stood by him. Horace and Laura didn't live together after his nervous breakdown. They never divorced. They never legally separated. And their relationship was quite unique. And you being the great explorer that you are, and you're gone a lot from your own life, there's an understanding and there's a trust that you and your wife have and Horace and Laura had. You go home to your wife, and Horace did not. But he would send her recipes for camping and woodcraft, and she would try them out. He sent her patterns for tents that he was designing, and so she would sew them up and send them to him. It was just a relationship that was unconventional, but it worked for them. And it also helped keep Horace centered and balanced in the Smokies. And for that, I think we all should be just very grateful to Laura.
Did Laura ever visit Horace while he was in the Smokies?
After he died.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Now, there is rumor within the family, and I've always trusted these family stories because sooner or later there's written evidence that these are true, that he designed cabins, and his cabin designs are at Western Carolina in his journal.
Yes.
And the family story is he really hoped to have Laura move down to the Smokies in one of the cabins that he designed, and she could bring the fine china and the fine linen. And the money from this was going to come from Smoky Mountain Magic, which was never published in his lifetime. But that was his dream. Whether that would have come to reality or not, had he lived, we'll never know.
And what year was the automobile accident?
1931, April 2nd, 1931.
And Horace, he's buried in Bryson City.
Yes, he is. We have all been there. And for those of your listeners who have not been to Kephart's grave, when you go, it's a boulder, actually, that came out of the Smokies, out of the Smokemont area.
Correct.
And it's just such a place of peace. And quite often when I go visit his grave, which I do every time I get up to Bryson City, excuse me, I go there. My first thing I do, Dale, is I drive to the cemetery. And quite often there's somebody there. And one time there was a gentleman there, and I just kind of stood back and I'm watching him. And he was just so peaceful. And after a while, I went up and I introduced myself, and I asked why was he there. And he said he just had to say thank you to one of the greatest men that he had ever heard of.
Yeah, it's an amazing experience, and also people leave little mementos on the stone.
Yes, they do, and it's quite interesting. Some people will leave coins. There's been fish hooks. There's been little stacks of rocks. Always a variety of gifts that they leave for him.
Yeah, it always amazes me every time I'm like you. Every time I'm in that area, I always stop by and visit with Horace a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always something on the stones there. And of course, I just leave it alone, and you come back, and something new or different is there.
I did give permission to the, not that they need my permission, but I said to them, as a family member, it'd be fine with me when somebody leaves coins, that after a week or so to put it into the fund for maintaining the cemetery, because the money seems to walk.
Yeah. So
I'd rather have it only sit there for a week.
Yeah. And, but, you know, I've been there when there was $4 or $5 in quarters laying there.
And sometimes people will leave, like, 68 cents because he was born in 1968, or they'll leave 31 cents because he died in 1931. There's always a little bit of a story behind what people leave.
That it is.
Mm-hmm.
Libby, we're going to take a little short break, and we will be back after these messages.
Okay.
Welcome back to Nature's Edge, and my special guest today, Miss Libby Gephart Hargrave. Libby is the great-granddaughter of Horace Gephart. And Libby's been giving us a little bio, and we've been discussing Horace at length here. And Libby, I want to jump in a little bit. A lot of people may not know his influence on getting the Great Smoky Mountain National Park in existence, and also his work with the Appalachian Trail. Would you discuss that a little bit with us?
Absolutely. I'm looking in a little book that I have that he wrote called Horace Gephart by Himself. He talks about what happened when he saw the lumbermen come and destroy the mountains. And he says, it got me out of my private shell, and I got to saying things. He got to saying a lot of things. And I kind of chuckle always at that line where he says, I got to saying things. There are many, many voices, Dale, as we all know, of people that are responsible for the establishment of the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Gephart was the voice that of a writer, of a person who could articulate what needed to be said for Congress and the government to understand how valuable this land was and how devastating it was to see the lumbermen come in and completely destroy the mountains. And all, just all the life and all the plants, everything that's so important for the Smoky Mountains, because it goes way beyond the Smokies, everything that happened up there. But he was the voice that went to Washington, D.C. he testified in front of Congress as to why we need to save this land. His partner in this, we call him the Partners in Crime, was George Massa. And George Massa's voice was his camera. George took the most magnificent photographs documenting the Smokies, and Kephart wrote about them. And they hiked every single trail and beyond of the Smokies to make sure that before they printed a word or published a photograph, that they had their facts straight. And they did, and look what we have. After Kephart found out that the park was going to be established, he wrote to my grandma. We called her Nana, and that was my grandfather's wife. My grandfather was Kephart's fifth child. But he wrote in a letter, "The long and difficult task of surveying, examining titles, estimating values, etc., of the Smoky Mountain National Park lands is finished. And now, at last, the actual purchase or condemnation of the whole area will proceed to a finish. It was a big undertaking and beset with discouragements of all sorts, but we've won. Within 2 years, we will have good roads into the Smokies, and then, well then, I'll get out." Isn't that lovely?
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, again, he was a writer. He knew mm-hmm. how to communicate the written language, and he knew how to speak as well.
Correct.
So he was fortunate that before his untimely death, he did know that the Smoky Mountains Park was going to be created. Just quickly, a little bit about his work with the Appalachian Trail.
He, along with people like Paul Fink, Bartram, all the great voices of the AT, and
yes.
George Massa and Kephart were the ones who helped design the trail through the Smokies. And there's letters which are at Western Carolina communicating the trail needs to go here, now let's move the trail there, now let's have it start here, let's have it start there. And just a great weaving of where these trails are going to go. But it was basically Kephart and Massa, along with Paul Fink and a few other folks in the Smokies that helped establish it in the North Carolina-Tennessee area.
Yeah, he was, I would say he was pretty instrumental in doing that. We have about a minute or a little more, Libby, but I wanted to talk about his children, too, Horace's children, because they were okay. They grew up to be pretty respectful outdoorsmen themselves, many of them.
Absolutely they did. Each one, they had six children, all but one went to Cornell University on scholarship. The one who did not went to nursing school. The two boys, my great-uncle Leonard and then my grandfather George. My grandfather ended up retiring as the chief of forestry for the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Yes.
And then Leonard, which is another radio show we need to do, is the first American to climb Mount Kilimanjaro.
And as you know, I actually followed in Leonard's footsteps.
Yes, you did.
many years ago, and I've also climbed Kilimanjaro. So I was grateful that I got to also study this amazing gentleman. And as you said, he is a whole other radio show, which we'll have to do on Leonard. Libby, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy world to spend some time with us here on Nature's Edge.
Well, thank you. And I think the more that we get to know Horace Kephart, and I always say he was a complex man, yet in so many ways he was a simple man.
Absolutely.
He lost his way and found his way back in the Smokies.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us today on Nature's Edge. And friends, remember, when you look deep into nature, then you will understand everything better. Until next time, this is Dale Stewart, Nature's Edge.